near Westphalia, Michigan, which is in the western part of Clinton County here in Michigan. I attended the local schools and went to a one-room high school for 3 years. They didn't have a 12th grade at that time at the village. I finished at Fowler High School in 1936. One of my teachers highly recommended that I go to college, and really hadn't planned on that, but since they encouraged me so much, I came here in the fall of 36 and tried to enroll in engineering. Well, I didn't have enough science credits, and so I went to East Lansing High School for a semester and made up my shortages. I started school in the next year. I worked some on a construction project that winter of 36 and 37 on campus. It's the year they were building Sarah Williams Dormitory.
Was that a WPA project or?
Not WPA. It had some public works funding, mm-hmm. a small amount. Mm-hmm. No, it was part of the self-liquidating program that they had mm-hmm. started. And Chrisman Company were the general contractors. And I worked some for another contractor in northern Michigan. Anyway, I came back to school in the fall of 37. Had a few hundred bucks saved, and that was a lot of money at that time. Tuition was low. So I started school. I ran out of money, so I got a job in 1938 for a contractor building electric lines in northern Michigan. And I came back, I believe, winter term in January. The result of this was that it took me about 6 years from 1936 to 1942 to get my degree. In the meantime, I picked up some credits towards a master's degree and never completed that. I had intended to, but we got into World War II. And so I went to work for General Motors, and I ended up within a few months being classified essential to the war production. I was expecting to go into the service because I had 4 years of reserve officer training, but they wouldn't give me the commission because I had poor hearing, and that ended my military career. Mm-hmm. So from General Motors, I came here. It appeared like my future with them would be to become part of their central engineering office in Detroit and then travel worldwide to projects that they had underway, and I wasn't much interested in doing that. So this place here was bustling with new construction mm-hmm. in the fall of 1946. And so I get involved. I was appointed as assistant construction engineer, and the campus was generally torn up. The North Campus had a lot of construction started. During World War II, they were unable to do any construction for lack of material and funds. This set of facilities was used by the military to provide educational opportunity and training for recruits into the military program. So the facilities were kept busy during World War II, but right after, there was a complete turnover of students. The military pulled out, and a new class of young people came in, and a lot of them had been in the service, and they were generally known as GIs because they had some government help in their tuition and expense. And Now, the enrollment, as I recall, was around 4,000. And these numbers aren't clear. They would be in the record. It, somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000. It increased very rapidly. You know, I think people have to understand that this was a small organization, a small place, but it made the people here made every effort possible to accommodate the influx of young people coming back from the service who wanted an education. And so they built on South Campus some barracks housing, 1,100 apartments. They were one-story buildings that were moved in from some of the Army camps around the country. They also, west of the state police post, put in about 500 trailers. And now, that was quite an undertaking.
Were you involved in that?
I was in 40, this was well started. I came in November of 46.
Okay.
I helped finish it, yes. I became involved, very much so. There wasn't any staff to speak of. I was a recruit, new, with the background that they wanted, and plunged into the middle of the process and asked to go ahead and set up an engineering service for the campus. They had engineering professors who were teaching, but they had a former carpenter that was doing some inspection work, but they didn't have any graduate engineers or professional engineers. All the planning was done by consultants from off campus, and they reported directly to the president. Well, so that was the start of my career at Michigan State, coming in here, and I thought I'd stay a year or two. It was exciting. They were digging and building all over, and I thought I'd stay a year or two, but I could soon see that there was a lot of opportunity here to set up an organization and provide a service that would be essential, coordinate the program. So we did. There was a lot of master planning had to be done. There really weren't master plans that reached out to accommodate what was being predicted, that our enrollment would go up rapidly. And quietly, we talked about 35,000 student enrollment down the road. Now, if you mentioned it publicly, at a small college on the North Campus, generally people thought that a bunch of loony people out here. But that's what we quietly planned for when we laid out the water system on paper, the sewer system, the electrical, and future road plans, and we developed a book of standards then, which sort of provided to the outside consultants guidelines for the type of building components that we would accept as a standard. Generally, we tried to get durable construction. Exteriors made of brick and good windows and so forth, and interior in the machine rooms we tried to standardize on a few different makes of parts, like your return pumps in a machine room. They had a wide variety, and every time one broke down, sometimes you could find a part. Sometimes they had to junk the pump because parts were no longer available. And I named that as one item. There were hundreds of components in the building that needed to be standardized and still remain in a way that there could be competition in the building. So we named three or four name companies as standard or approved equal. And So there was a lot of work to be done besides what met the eye as far as public.
Who else was involved in that planning?
In that planning?
Mm-hmm.
There was a Mr. Hal Lautner who came back, who headed up the site planning. He came back from the service. And he was about the same age as Dr. Hanna. They knew each other. Of course, there was a Philip May who came here in 46, about the same time I did, and became vice president of business and finance. He was a key person. Another man that returned was Emory Foster, who had been in the hotel industry. He was a graduate from here, and he was appointed to head up the housing program, which was under considerable pressure to expand, because East Lansing was a really a small town. There was very little housing available for rent by students. And students were sleeping in cars, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
There wasn't any place to go. Jennison Gymnasium, the year that I came, that fall winter, the top floor was filled with army cots. Students slept up there.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't any rooms for them. They used the locker rooms and shower rooms. It was an extreme situation as far as comfort. But Michigan State leadership and board of, they called it State Board of Agriculture, mm-hmm. were quite determined to accommodate the GIs and the young people that were looking for an education. It was generally accepted that Michigan State was putting up forth more effort than any other institution in the country. So, our enrollments start jumping up 3,000-4,000 a year. Now you can imagine piling that much increase on a small established college.
Mm-hmm.
The people that we had to hire and train for the service area in the housing to staff a dormitory, when they opened up a dormitory, it took a couple hundred new people. And professors and instructors had to be brought in. It seemed like we were overloaded year after year. But there was a job to do. Everybody was committed to doing it. And we worked whatever hours it took. There weren't any questions asked about whether you worked 8 to 5 or 8 to midnight. You just went in there and got the job done.
who hired you?
Who hired
when
me?
When he came back.
Mm-hmm. Ed Kinney was superintendent of buildings and utilities. He interviewed me. Now, I had been downtown Lansing to lunch. In those days, downtown Lansing, Washington Avenue, was bustling with business. And it was a place to go from the Oldsmobile and General Motors plants. So a friend of mine told me there was a lot of activity out here, and they were really desperately in need of someone that had my kind of experience and background. So I came out, interviewed. It was a verbal process, nothing put on paper. And as we finished, after about 20 minutes, he said, "You'll be hearing from us." So I went home. I went back to work the next day at GM. I didn't hear a thing for a couple weeks. I came home one night from work, and my wife said, "What have you been up to now? You've made headlines in the State Journal." I said, "How? In what way?" "Well," she said, "you were appointed assistant construction engineer by the Board of Agriculture." So that's how I was hired.
So your wife knew before you did.
She did. So I called the next day. I said, "Is this a joke, or did someone just released something by mistake. Oh, no, I want you to come out, come to work. So, still nothing on paper. After I worked a day or two, they said, well, you better go to the Olin Center and get checked over physically. Well, that took place. Now, I don't know when I was entered into the record. I did get a paycheck. So. it was very informal.
Do you feel, do you feel that your education that you got here prepared you well for that job?
Very much so. That, along with the experience that I got working for contractors, as I was struggling to get a few dollars to continue the education. I worked on Jennison Fieldhouse building when that was under construction. The contractor gave me part-time work during the week. And I worked with the bricklayers, carpenters, and the engineer that did the layout. Then on weekends, they had me on site on duty to keep inspecting the building after it was up partway, keep the trespassers out so people wouldn't get hurt stumbling around over lumber and so forth, and I would water the new poured concrete, which is necessary to get it properly cured. But I had a bunch of odd jobs on weekends, so I earned enough that year to pay my expense and save a little bit. But that's one of the contractors I worked to. But that was very helpful. I knew the terminology when I was out of school, construction terms that are used in describing various components that they use to build and set forms. And so, but the education certainly was the main part.
Who were some of your professors that you remembered?
C. Allen, I think it was Chester Allen, was head of the Civil Engineering Department. Dr. Dirks was Dean of Engineering, D-I-R-K-S. Hall, H-A-L-L. There was a Professor Backus who taught engineering, electrical. His major was electrical. Now, I was going in a direction of civil engineering and structural engineering. I remember we took a class from him in high voltage AC power. And we were supposed to wire up something in that lab. Well, we apparently crossed some circuits because when we threw the switch on, it shut the camp.
It shut the campus
power off.
That didn't belong to
short time. So I remember when we finished our final, he said, "Now," he said, "you civil engineers, you're all going to pass. You all worked hard, and you learned just enough so that you should know enough about electrical to keep your fingers off. Let someone else handle the high-powered, high-voltage electrical design. You stick to your field." Now, there are people in this world who think they're jack-of-all-trades, can do everything. They usually get in trouble doing that.
How about General Motors and your work during the war? Was there anything that you picked up in dealing with the corporate world that you later found useful?
A lot about organization and methods and procedures. They're a very highly organized company as far as supervision and administration. Time factor was just a very important matter. Whatever we did, cost control, something that in some areas is not very popular. People don't want to hear about cost control. forget the cost. I'm important. I'm going to get this done regardless of cost. Well, you don't do that at General Motors. If you can't control your cost, you're out the back door because they have to compete worldwide. And that was true in those days, and it's more so now. So, yeah, I learned a lot over there in the 5 years I was with them.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about the temporary housing that you mentioned, the trailers? Did they come from the government, or were they just
privately? No, they came from an army camp someplace.
Okay, all right. Right. And the Quonset huts, people have talked about those before.
There are 100 and some of those brought in, set up. Those projects were not spread out over much time. In a few weeks, you know, the hollow men, you'd put a concrete slab down, you'd set them up, you ran temporary wire in. The first that were occupied had electrical wires strung, hanging from the ceiling with sockets and light bulbs stuck in, no fixtures. And they put the oil-fired heater stove in one end. It was pretty crude living, but the guys that had been in the trenches in World War II, to them it was pretty luxurious. And they came to get an education.
Yeah. Was this for married students? Or
The Quonsets were mostly used by single students.
Okay.
I don't know of any married couples in there. The barracks, they had apartments. And the trailers had married couples. Now, trailers were on the site that now has University Village. The barracks were on the south side of Shaw Lane. Okay. From Shaw Lane to the railroad track, and from Harrison back to what is now the Communication Arts Building.
Okay.
A big acreage was filled with those buildings.
Mm-hmm. So in those early years, you were involved in the construction projects that were going on?
Here?
Yes.
Yeah, I was at General Motors, too.
Okay.
We did a lot of rebuilding, conversion from one contract to another. We set up facilities in less than 2 weeks for some production contracts, wall work. Now here, with this onrush of students, there wasn't much time. We put projects together in a hurry. As assistant constructioner, I was very much involved, coordinating, inspecting, and
did President Hanna take a hands-on approach, or did he turn it over to the people that knew what they were doing?
He had his eye on things a good share of the time. He was the kind of person that was an early riser. He used to go for a walk out in the country. He'd go horseback riding between 5 and 6 in the morning with the superintendent of farms. He knew what was going on. I'll give us as an example, University Village apartments were under construction. They were at the point where the frame was up and we were putting insulating blankets in the wall, getting ready to put the exterior. Well, we had a terrible windstorm on a weekend, and it tore some of that loose. Well, he was coming back from northern Michigan where he had been, and on Sunday night, he cruised through that project. Before 8 o'clock Monday morning, I had a call. He said, Ted, is that the way you're going to build those? He didn't know we had a windstorm. I said, no. I said, I'm aware of what happened. We had a windstorm. It'll be corrected. Oh, okay. He said, okay. Now, he was not prowling around in the buildings every day, but he was around enough so we knew that the man knew what was happening.
What were some of the notable construction projects that you were involved in those early years, that you remember as being very memorable?
Well, they were all important. Natural science building was underway when I returned. On North Campus, Berkey Hall was being started. I guess I'd have to look at this chronological list. Union Building was getting an addition. Well, anything that was being built on campus, I was involved in that.
Did your job title change at all over the years?
Well, it stayed as assistant construction engineer until the early 50s. And sometime along the way, they appointed me as, gave me the full title, construction engineer. If you got to fight something on a raise, that was a big deal at that time.
Uh-huh.
Believe it or not, that was a big raise.
Mm-hmm.
But in the early 50s, I became a construction engineer, and then in the mid-50s, I was named superintendent of buildings and utilities, and that was a top job in that service organization. The man that interviewed me originally, Mr. Kinney, retired. And subsequently, there were more name title changes from superintendent of building utilities to director of physical plant, and I retired as assistant vice president. For physical plant facilities, and I was one of three individuals that reported to Roger Wilkinson direct. I handled the facilities matters. Emory Foster was assistant vice president in charge of all the housing, and Steve think of that, it'll come to me. Fill that in later.
We can add that.
He handled the finance, accounting and financial control. Mm-hmm. We'd have a meeting, a breakfast meeting every 2 weeks, which would last an hour or so. One of us would be appointed to stop and pick up the rolls and get the coffee made. That was breakfast.
What, in the development of the power plants, how did you take a direct role in that? How did that change during your tenure?
Well, that's a story in itself. When I was in private industry, I kept hearing about the amount of waste that was taking place on the campus. People were wasting money, not only here, but generally in higher education. And so I was meeting with the one of the assistant engineers in the state building division one night at a dinner meeting, Grand Valley Chapter of Engineers. I was attending that, and I sat next to him and I said, I keep hearing about this waste that's taking place. What is that all about? Michigan State is supposed to be wasting so much money. That was right after I moved out here. He said, you're burning more fuel per cubic foot of space than any other college in the state, even up at Houghton and Hancock, Northern Michigan. Michigan Tech. Mm-hmm. They don't use as much fuel as you do. It's being wasted out there, and something should be done about it. So I said, Ralph, I think we can do something about that. And so we started putting into our standards book some requirements. The lobbyist generally had control of what went into specifications, believe it or not. They were putting 100-foot candles of lighting into classroom space and offices. You don't need it. it's hard on the eyes if you have that much brightness. Mm-hmm. Now, you need it for task light lighting. So we cut back on that, for instance. The design that we allowed after we got our standards developed permitted the general lighting of 50-foot candles. Cut it in half. We made hundreds of changes in the requirements and what we allowed in construction. The other thing that they had at Michigan State, they had some capacity to build, to generate their own power. And that concept, the dual energy or cogeneration concept, existed in the old North Campus power plant. It's now gone, but it was on that site that the, just north of the administration building.
Where now? Not the power plant, but the, where was the original power plant?
Right there north of the administration building.
Okay.
The current administration building.
All right. So there's close to Olds Hall?
No, this way from Olds
Hall.
All right. It's if you look out the front door of the administration building, look right straight northeast, and it's not too far from the circle drive that comes by there. There's a big underground chamber, the tunnels that carried the